Welcome to Seeking Alpha's Wall Street Breakfast, your daily source of market news and analysis. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Welcome to Seeking Alpha Editor's Roundtable, What Moved Markets This Week, the week concluding Friday, June 18, 2021, a week that was marked by the Fed interest rate decision, perhaps not so much the decision itself as the commentary around it, the Fed coming in and saying they will likely adjust interest rates higher before 2024 and are more concerned about inflation than they had previously let on. Markets reacted to this, not so much the major indexes, although those are down for the week. The S&P 500 is off about 1.5%. The Dow is down 3%, putting it on track for its worst week since January. And small caps are also seeing quite a bit of selling, down 3%. The NASDAQ tech stocks initially rallied after the interest rate decision and are off just 0.2%. But the interesting thing was how it all played out within the various sectors. You had commodities and materials and industrials sell off, as would be expected, but you also had financials sell off. So there's a lot for us to unpack here. And let me introduce my colleagues before I go any further. In no particular order, they are Brad Olison, VP of News, Kim Kahn, Senior News Editor, and Stephen Alfer, Managing Editor of Breaking News. I am your host and moderator, Nathaniel E. Baker, Senior Editor of Strategic Contributors. Let's start with Kim to give us his reaction to what moved markets this week.
Well, it's obviously, as you said, the Fed was driving the markets this week and kind of underscoring how we're playing under different rules with this post-pandemic market of seeing the kind of a lot of sharp swings in stocks and bonds, initial reactions, then reconsidering and then reconsidering. I mean, the first reaction was, to the dot plot that brought forward, rate expectations for most of the FOMC seeing rate hikes in 2023 that, got bond yields racing off on Fed Day and then only to plunge kind of the next day. During his press conference, Chief Powell did his best to kind of distance FOMC thinking from the dot plot, as he's done before, saying that it's just, remembering that these forecasts are, submitted even before they have the meeting and discuss it. And, it's just a guide and not what the Fed's looking for. And saying we're ways away from the progress that the Fed needs to see to start tightening. And then the market is basically trying to make sense of this. I think Guggenheim's Scott Minard was right on the money when he said that, the reason that we're going to see bond yields continuing to fall is that that's been the trend since March, and there's nothing really disrupted that. And the market's going to want to see some moves by the Fed to basically say, we've got this in mind. We know we see inflation rising. And so a little hawkishness from the Fed is actually going to, get the bond market what it wants and keep the trend intact. And as we see now, we got the 10-year around 1.45%.
Yeah, one can't help but wonder if maybe the market reaction would have been even more violent or a lot more violent if the Fed had done nothing but stuck to their views that this is all transitory inflation and that they aren't going to touch interest rates until 2024. So curious about that, Brad. And then also I touched on the winners and losers, financials getting sold, commodities getting sold. So curious who these big winners and losers were this week and your other thoughts.
So yeah, the inflation story, obviously, first and foremost, that's, on top of mind. But let me just preface this real quick with a UBS note that I crossed the desk earlier today. They're looking at their outlook for the rest of the year, right? We're coming up on the end of June, the end of the first half. A lot has happened in this first part of the year with the reopening story taking hold. And one thing that jumped out at me, and it's relevant for today's discussion, because a lot of what they're telling clients to do is already happening. Whether the reasons behind that call were are right or not. UBS was basically calling for everyone to sell the winners, and that happens to be mostly energy names in this case, in terms of you're looking at your year-to-date gainers or those have gained in the last year. Also, steel names happen to be among the list. We saw Nucor. Nucor is among the top performers there, and then get behind some work from home names. So I just wanted to kind of plant that seed there, and I'll kind of go into the rest of the losers and winners and how they've proceeded this week. And so just to start it off, obviously, as we've all said, the commodity names and banks and consumer staples and utilities were all among the weakest names this week because of the rate story. As interest rates rise, you're going to have the shine comes off of, and the luster comes off of gold, for example. And also a lot of these other just commodity names is just, you have higher yield and a risk-free rate. So why would you be investing in some of these more commodity focused names? Freeport McMoRan tops the list there in terms of the weakness this week, followed by Nucor. Mosaic was another big commodity name. Financials like Citibank and Lincoln National also were among the weakest names. They benefit in a rising rate environment, or actually more to do with the spread rather than anything else. And we saw a bit of the spreads between the 5 and the 30 year kind of come in substantially this week, especially towards the end of the week after the initial pop from the interest rates happened in midweek. And also Snap-on, which was kind of a beneficiary of home renovations during the pandemic, that also suffered a bit this week. If you kind of put that next to Home Depot's chart, they almost had the exact same percentage gain since April and March of last year, just showing how people is invested in their homes during the pandemic. So that was a little bit weaker this week also, as we have this work from home is kind of subsiding, et cetera. So already mentioned the rate sensitive names. And on the positive side, we had the chip names, which are beneficiaries of some of this new technology wave of hybrid work models. AMD and NVIDIA both were some of the bigger gainers this week, but they were benefiting actually on the back of some M&A. They both had some real positive news on their subsequent deals. AMD is buying Xilinx and NVIDIA with its $40 billion ARM deal. And so both of them got some positive regulatory developments on that front, which helped bolster some of their performance this week. And that also happened to jive, like I said, with the UBS note, and together with the big news, at least for New Yorkers, which was the big fireworks display celebrating the end of the pandemic, as New York basically lifted all the remaining restrictions that were put in to do with the pandemic.
You're not referring to what happened in Washington Square Park this past week with the fireworks. There were actual fireworks,
right?
Not just gunshots. There may have been that as well, but
celebratory, I guess.
Right,
New York was one of the original U.S. hot zones, right?
Yes, I remember well. All right, Stephen, what are your thoughts on this whole interest rate move and everything else?
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about it on this show for, at least 3 months now. The Fed's policy, they did what they had to do in 2020, right? The economy shut down, the financial system would have collapsed. Okay, they did what they had to do. A year later, in the middle of one of the great economic growth inflationary boomlets, of our lifetimes, for them say, well, we're not even thinking about hiking rates till the end of 2023 was irresponsible, bordering on a complete insanity. So all they, it's for a bureaucracy the size of the Fed with their hundreds or thousands of economists and their crappy models, for them to actually make this change, we shouldn't discount the move. This is a big change. And for Jim Bullard to go out and make the rounds, he's an Uber dove, for him to go out and make the rounds this morning saying he's brought forth his expectations of rate hikes to late 2022, that's a big change. And markets should have been somewhat shocked by it, although it was a long time coming, in my opinion.
Not to mention, you have to look at the better than expected. There were like four or five better than expected that I read about today. There was a better than expected vaccination rate. There was a higher than expected stimulus plan. There was better than expected other economic signals. So I think they're all only as good as the data that they can currently pull. And as long as there's everyone exceeds those expectations, they're going to have to respond in kind. And it looks like they are. And it's just whether yields are going to respond to that is the next question. We're seeing that the market is responding, just not in the bond market. The gold names sold off tremendously. We saw the commodity names sell off tremendously. And so we can't discount that, not to mention the dollar, right, which is heavily interest rate focus. So the dollar is just on a tear, which is going to put a little damper on some of the equities now that a lot of them are have a lot of foreign exposure.
Yeah. Although what's remarkable is that the Fed hasn't actually done anything. They've just, this is all talk. And by the way, 2022, late 2022 is still almost
a year. Still crazy. It's still crazy. Yeah. So
yeah, it's a year and a half away. So who knows what could happen. And if there is something, there's a violent sell-off, do you really think they're going to stick to their interest rate hikes?
Yeah. And I wouldn't make too much of the moves in long-term treasury yields. I mean, the Fed is still buying whatever 20, 30, 40 billion of this paper a month. So there's no price discovery in the treasury market. So you make of it what you wish. And there's another thing going on, and there's the rest of the world too, right? And at 1.4% or whatever the 10-year is at right now, 1.45%, we're still hundreds. We're 175 basis points higher than the 10-year bond yield. We're 100 basis points higher than Spain, for crying out loud. We're probably 120 basis points higher than Greece. So on a relative basis, long-term treasuries are priced very nicely.
Right. It's the buyers and sellers. It's the demand. Exactly.
Do you guys think the Powell is still around by the time the Fed actually does something?
Good question.
That's above our pay grade, I think.
Yeah. I mean, there hasn't been any talk about that. I mean, so when is his term
due? February, I think.
So February 2022. Right. All right. Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see. I mean, who knows? But yeah.
And we shouldn't forget that Janet Yellen seems to have forgotten that she's no longer the head of the Fed. She's the Treasury Secretary. She's constantly sticking her nose into Fed policy. She was probably the first one to start talking about the possibility of higher inflation and higher interest rates, right? And I don't know whether she was sending a public signal to Powell or whatever was going on there. I'd be totally interested in finding out someday kind of what the back channel things were going on that front.
Yeah, although she ended up walking back those the initial comments, and then she made other ones.
Yeah, one wonders. I'd like to see Powell's telephone records from that day.
Well, at his press conference, Powell sounded to me like he was the dovish one of the FOMC, and that he was trying to actually rein in all these hawks. And so
he's highly dovish, right? What did he do in 2018? Right, he came in and hiked rates, and the markets, you know, collapsed basically, and he turned on a dime and became Mr. Uber Dove. So I think he learned his lesson very well.
All right, let's move on to the next segment of the show where we talk about things other than interest rates, perhaps, namely our favorite stories, favorite articles that we've edited, worked on, or perhaps been involved with. Sometimes we look at the Twitter sphere as well. And let's start with Kim.
Well, I was looking into Juneteenth, which is now a federal holiday, and just because it's coming up on the decision, obviously, okay, it's just been signed into a holiday, and the markets are open today, which would have been the observed day for it. But next year will be a question on whether, you know, the bond market will pretty much definitely be closed because the Fed will be closed and Fedwire will be down. But it is a decision for the NYSE to make and their board to vote on. It hasn't been a while since they've done that. It took them 11 years to vote to decide to have Martin Luther King Jr. Day as a market holiday. They don't do all federal holidays. They don't do Veterans Day or Columbus Day or Good Friday, so they don't have to follow the calendar. So it's going to be interesting to see how the vote goes, I mean, especially in the age of social media, and see what kind of lobbying they get from all sides.
Yeah, I'm going to make a prediction here that Juneteenth is, in addition to being a national holiday, will be a holiday for all public stock markets, certainly in the U.S., maybe even worldwide, just because the social pressure is too high. And we were talking about this before we started recording, but once somebody does it, once one bank or whatever, one exchange decides they're going to close that day, everybody else is going to follow. The alternative would not be good. I don't think the NYSE wants to deal with having protests on June 19th every single year. And, people could use another holiday.
So yeah, I think especially banks, in the summer.
And I think the banks already, I think Bank of America is already out there saying that they are giving a lot of their employees that day off. So that may create that implicit pressure. And I think Good Friday, the markets do have off. But yes, the Columbus Day and veterans are not observed by the NYSE.
Right.
I personally am looking forward to hordes of new bank research on whether to you know, buy the Juneteenth holiday or sell the Juneteenth holiday, the way we get at all this stuff about Christmas and Good Friday and sell in May and go away. So we've provided a whole new fodder for more bank research here. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, actually, good question here is what would this might do for retail markets if there's any type of, you know, spending that might occur ahead of the Juneteenth holiday. Somebody to think about as well. Brad, what about you? Favorite story?
So we talked about the meme stocks, you know, last couple of weeks, sending shares soaring. I'd like to do the flip side of that and talk about the short seller reports making shares crash. So today or this week, we had Hindenburg come out with two reports, one on DraftKings and the other one on Lordstown Motors. Both stocks took a little bit of a drubbing this week. Lordstown, this is kind of, I guess, throwing salt on the wound. They already, I think in the prior week, had issued a going concern notice about their financial position. And then Hindenburg had a report out there. The CEO and CFO both resigned following this investigation that had surrounded the veracity of some of their claims around their pre-orders for some of their vehicles. I remember Lordstown was a SPAC deal recently. And then DraftKings kind of tumbled a little bit on Hindenburg's raising of some questions around whether, I guess, the gaming and gambling associated with that app had some sort of illicit ties. You know, no proof out there, obviously, yet that we can point to, but short sellers are still alive and well, despite the fact that the meme traders have been trying to run them out of business for what we've seen over the past couple months.
Yeah, short sellers certainly, we've talked about this before, they certainly have their place, and some of these high conviction short reports can be very damning and disturbing and certainly move the stock. But I don't know about the Lordstown one, but the DraftKings one, I know, I mean, it sold off a bit, maybe 5%, and then it rebounded. And one would think that if they are really involved in illicit activities, which, by the way, I don't think it's in the U.S. I think it's like in Bulgaria or something.
Right.
But that would.
It was a short-lived move for sure. Yeah. That was not necessarily. I don't think that was a lasting blow, I think, mm-hmm. to the credibility of that company. And not to mention, I think it's going to be very, very hard to prove any of that too. And then I guess what do you want to say? Shocker. Gambling has ties to questionable activity. I don't think that surprised anyone necessarily. And that's no knock on DraftKings. That's just 100 years of the U.S. having exposure to it. So.
Indeed. Steven, what about you? Favorite stories?
Done by our one of our news team, Jason Aycock, was the Lina Khan was passed the Senate confirmation process. She's going to be the new head of the FTC. She's supposedly a champion of some serious antitrust action against the tech giants. I'm skeptical. She's 32 years old, you know, obviously brilliantly accomplished to even be considered for a position like that. I'm reminded of, I don't know, any number of whiz kids who have come to Washington in their 30s, you know, David Stockman or all the folks the Kennedy administration brought in, or, you know, they usually end up leaving D.C. with their tail between their legs and golden parachute into a big Wall Street job or something like that. And I've no doubt that some sort of legislation might get passed against the Amazons and Apples and Googles and Facebooks of the world. And the FTC might launch some lawsuit against some half-assed acquisition by Facebook or something like that in coming years. But these guys are more powerful than Bill Gates and Microsoft or John Rockefeller ever dreamed they would be. And they kind of own the town, and they'll have a seat at the table for anything that kind of comes to pass with these guys.
Massive bipartisan support for her, showing that there is kind of a willingness in D.C. to kind of support her line of thinking. And as long as we're talking about the 30-somethings, wasn't Neil Kashkari? We have to
go back to the Fed, right?
Somehow, right? We can't just not talk about that. I think he was one of those whiz kids who soared into D.C., and now he's sitting pretty on the Fed.
Yeah, he soared into D.C., handed out a pile of cash and
right. Flipped parachuted. Out of the cash, go the opposite direction, right? Left Goldman to go there. So anyway.
Yeah, you know, I covered antitrust for a little while, for a couple months, which incidentally were probably the worst 4 or 5 months of my life. But that's another story for another day. But these authorities, the FTC and the DOJ, they do have the power to break up these companies. And it's just, you know, if they just get the will together enough to do it. And like you said, there is bipartisan support. And yes, these companies will fight it tooth and nail, but I don't know. On one level, I kind of want to root for the underdog here a little bit, because these companies have a lot of power, and we've seen it. We've seen just how they throw their weight around. We've seen Facebook. We've seen Zuckerberg be called to Capitol Hill several times and just kind of thumb his nose at regulators and come up with a bunch of BS about all kinds of stuff and then leave and not do anything. So, you know, it's maybe high time for this to end, but who knows? We'll see.
And the FTC did sue Microsoft in the 90s, right?
That's right.
But here's the thing, like once those cases are settled, they wind their way through the courts for years, right? Once they're settled, like the whole reason for the suit is usually, you know, the U.S. government got their win, they got their scalp, but the whole reason for the suit was kind of passed by the time it was settled. I mean, I think it was over Internet Explorers, I guess, ostensibly. And by that time, everybody hated Internet Explorer anyway. Nobody was using it. So,
right.
But so
right.
It'll be interesting to watch.
On from Netscape as well. So
they didn't right. They moved on from Netscape too. That's right. So I guess it was settled right around 2000 or something, right? Maybe 5-6 years after the suit right. was launched.
But that's the whole point. Like Facebook has acquired Instagram. They've acquired WhatsApp. And they've kind of spread their tentacles into all kinds of things. So what are the 3D glasses things that they bought that too?
Yeah.
So you would think this is from an antitrust perspective right for a breakup, but
yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if they're forced to give up like Oculus or something at some point.
Oculus,
five years down the road.
But there's no way around that, right? Never get too concentrated in one area. Follow the Amazon playbook and just be 10% of everything in the world, and you'll be okay. You don't even have to disclose it. You know, we didn't even know how big AWS was until just a couple of years ago, until it became large enough as a percentage. So that's the playbook if they want to do it. And Microsoft today is larger and more powerful than it ever was before the FTC decided to clamp down on them. And let's not forget AT&T, right? Wasn't that for, you know, Baby Bells, right? So
yeah, well, that's the famous one. Yeah, yeah. Although, you know, Bill Gates, his reputation has taken a little bit of a hit for different reasons over the past couple of months. All right. And for me, lastly, switching gears again back into commodities here, the story that was just published about an hour ago now by Carl Surin, one of our editors, Goldman's Curry doubles down on bullish commodity view after yesterday's dip. I love the contrarian views here. And if something is selling off and someone from Goldman of all places comes in and said, this is a buy, it gets my attention. And so he says this is his near-term highest conviction long. Brent crude averaging $80 a barrel in Q3, which is not that big of a spike. It's what, 70 now, 70 plus? So he says recovery in commodities markets, excluding energy, will likely take longer than other recent sell-offs, though. Whether Chinese-mandated repositioning and things like that. He says gold is undervalued as well. And gold has actually rebounded a bit today from what I've seen. Anyway, that was what I have.
It's a good story.
Yeah. All right. So that concludes this week's podcast/videocast. If you have been listening, please do check out the video by going to the website seekingalpha.com/videos and watching it. And as we, by the time that you are seeing and viewing this, England will probably have already defeated Scotland. And I say probably, and that's actually false. They will have defeated Scotland. So with that, we thank you for watching and listening this week, and look forward to speaking to you again next week.
That concludes today's Wall Street Breakfast. Thank you for listening. For the best investment analysis and news on the web, go to seekingalpha.com. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can sign up for our other podcasts, Behind the Idea, Essay for FAs, Let's Talk ETFs, the Cannabis Investing Podcast, and Marketplace Roundtable on those platforms as well. Have a great day.